You're listening to Show Me the Numbers with Yael Kagan, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon from sunny Los Angeles on this Wednesday. It's 12 noon Pacific time. And welcome to the show on LA Talk Radio, Show Me the Numbers. I'm Yael Kagan. I'm a hypnotherapist with a private practice here in the LA area. I also master in neuro-linguistic programming, also known as NLP, and I master numerology. And I'm also the author of a book that I wrote about a year ago, which is Show Me the Numbers or Unlock Your Child's Potential, which came in two languages, in Hebrew, and then due to demand, translated into English. And the book in English can be found, purchased directly through me or through Amazon, and people who are asking for the link, I'm happy to send that. And I have today a guest, Rania. We will bring you over. And hi, welcome Rania to the show.
Hi Yael, welcome.
Hi, it's a pleasure to have Rania. I actually know Rania for maybe close to 8 years or so, 7 or 8 years. I've known her as a friend, as one of the community member here. And I've learned a lot of things lately about her. And I was also at, you were a speaker, was it last week, in one of our centers here in LA. And I heard amazing information about the Israeli Druze, and which is
right,
exactly. And we're going to explore that. We're going to talk about it because it's basically the information is hidden. And when I met you that day, I told you that I took the time and I watched like a YouTube movie or documentary about it, and I learned a lot, and I was so happy telling you this is what I know, and you said not exactly, the information is very secretive. So we're gonna dive into it as much as we can, because I think it's important. As an Israeli, in my origin, I obviously knew the Druze and I even served with them. However, I didn't know nothing of what I know today, and it's very important to share it. And so I'm welcoming you again, Rania, and in very briefly just describe and tell the audience, the listeners, who exactly you are, and then I'll dive more into it.
Thank you, Yael. First, thank you very much for having me in your program.
Pleasure.
It's my honor, and you know how much I appreciate you. So my happiness today is very, like, as a friend and as your host. So, yes, the Druze issue, like, for me, as I said last week, I grew up struggling with my identity, because as you know, the Druze religion is secret. So when I was, very young, at a very young age, I'm a very curious person, and I like to ask so many questions, and many of my questions were just, either denied to be answered, or they were telling me, okay, you'll know later, it's better for you not to know. That's why I came into this world where I want to know my identity, and I want to learn more about it.
Which is quite amazing. Now, you were born in Israel?
I was born in a Druze village called Magar. Now it's a town, it's a city. And then my family moved to Dalat el Karmel,
which is in the north.
Most of the Israeli people know Dalat el Karmel. It's another Druze village in the Carmel Mountains near Haifa.
Okay, that's...
I lived a few years in Tel Aviv when I was working there, and then I moved to Los Angeles 11 years ago.
Okay, and you are married, right, to a Druze as well?
Yes, and I'm married with Sam. He's also Druze from Dalat el Karmel originally. He's been here for more than 26 years. And I have two boys.
Beautiful
Adam
boys.
And Danielle. Thank you.
Beautiful boys. And I have to say, she's an amazing mother. And I knew more about you as a mother and as a wife. I'm not even sure if you were working back then. And I always said, this girl has a potential. I mean, she's lost somewhere. She needs to do something. She has that power. She's a leader, and she needs to do something else. And I think it came with the years, and that's also when we connected. But I have to dive a little bit more into that before we run into another subject. But can you explain who the Druze are? Are the Druze considered Muslims, or is it their religion? Or how is it distinct from Islam? Because, like, even me as an Israeli, I did not know.
Right. I didn't know either. So when we grew up, as I told you, you read on Wikipedia, on Google, back then on books, of course, and you see that we are part of the Islam. We were established in 1021 in Egypt by the Muslim Caliphate Hakim bi-Amrillah. And then we were part of the Muslim Shiite sect, where we were separated from the Muslim Shiite sect back then in 1021. And since then, our religion became secret. Now, while some of this story is true, because we have been in Egypt at that time, but the fact is that we weren't established at that time. We believe, according to our Torah Shebe'al-Peh, which is the verbal in the told tradition in history, that we were way before the Islam. So our oral tradition tells a different story than what you can read in books and now on Google and Wikipedia. Our oral tradition says that we were way before Islam. We were discovered by the Muslim Caliphate as a group who worships God in some way that aligned with his beliefs. Because even in the Muslim history books, this caliphate, he traveled to Greece and to India and to the East, and he was so fascinated about this culture. And when he came back, he wanted to change the Muslim religion to a new religion that is more simple, more spiritual. And then when he discovered this group, so this aligns with our oral tradition that we say. So I can tell you, we are 100% not Muslims. Our religion is totally different, and we don't practice any of the five pillars of the Muslim, the Islamic religion, even though I do respect every religion. But I have to tell this because I also respect my identity and have to be truthful to my identity for my kids, for my new generation that I'm responsible to. Now, this confusion is not a coincidence. For so many years, the Druze people were living in countries where oppression was part of the culture. We were oppressed, we were suppressed, massacres were committed against us, not only in the old history, but also recently, like in 2015, in 2018, even in 2021 in Syria. So we were followed and chased during the whole history of ours. That's why we had to hide our religion. And if you know Yael, during the Ottoman Empire, everyone that wasn't Muslim, he had to pay tax only for being non-Muslim.
Right.
If we want to talk about apartheid at some point. So the Druze people were farmers. They were poor. And it's not a missionary religion anyway. So
we lost you a little bit, Rania. 1 second. We can't hear you. We can see you.
Oh.
Okay. Now I can hear you. Yeah. Now I can hear you. Okay. Right. So I haven't heard the last part of the last sentence.
So what I was saying, that the confusion is not a coincidence, because the Druze did this systematically to protect themselves. It's a survival mood, because back then in the Muslim tradition, it was very common among some Islamic sects to hide their identity, because they were also oppressed. Some of them were also oppressed. And then we adopted this principle to also protect ourselves from the oppression. That doesn't mean we are Muslims. That's the confusion.
Got you. That's very interesting. And you said that the Druze originates in Egypt. But where do you find Druze? I mean, that's what I read. I think you are saying it's not. So it's I do want to hear where did do the Druze originates from, and where can you find Druze communities those days in the world?
So that's true what you're saying. If you read on history books or Wikipedia or Google, you will see that we were originated there, as I said before. But according to our belief, as I said also, we are way before. And according to our tradition, oral tradition, we were established at Jethro's times. And we consider him as our founder. And we have a temple of Jethro's temple at Mount Hattim near Tiberia in Israel. And so this story is so long, but I'm gonna try to summarize it. I give a long lecture about it. This story says that Jethro, he was the father-in-law of Moses. And back then, Jethro was the advisor of Paro. And when Paro wanted to eliminate the Israelites, back then they were called Israelites, he wanted to eliminate them, and he was getting the advice of his three advisors, Bilam, Eob, and Jethro. All of them agreed that he would kill all the newborn infants of the Israelites to, limit their demographic enlargement. The only one that refused was Jethro. For that, he was punished and he was exiled to Midian. So some people say that he's Midianite. Some people say, no, he's not Midianite. He's Kenite, which is another nation that were known as very friendly to the Israelites. But that moment, he went to Midian and he became the priest of Midian. Many years later, when Moses had to escape Egypt, and we all know the story, I believe your audience knows the story, his adopted mother told him to go to Midian because there is only one person that can protect him, because he did protect the Israelites when he was the advisor of Paro. And back then he went to Midian. He married his wife, his sorry, he married his Moses married Jethro's daughter, Zipporah. So he became his father-in-law. But that's not the only connection. Jethro supported Moses all along the way. And even on Sinai, he admitted that Moses' God is greater than any God that he had knew. And even in the Torah, they say, Vayehad Yitro et bnei amo. Some say, Vayehad Yitro et bnei amo. Whether Vayehad or Vayehad, I want to just tell you a secret. It's not a secret
Wow.
anymore.
Only I can hear, don't worry.
No, it's not a secret anymore, but I want to tell you. You know, like that I said earlier, that Druze and Jews rhyme, right?
Right.
So there's another thing that is similar. I know that Jewish people don't like anyone to call them Jews. And also the Druze people don't like anyone to call them Druze. Druze is a cursed name. We didn't call ourselves Druze. We don't like this name. This was, we were named after the Muslim Caliphate and the story in Egypt. If you want, if there is a time, I can tell it, say it to your audience. After that Caliphate, do we have time to say that
Yeah, I mean.
story? Okay, so let me go back to the common story that we were established in Egypt. So according to our belief, we existed in Egypt. But we weren't established in Egypt, even though in our oral tradition we call that era in Egypt exposure era, not the establishment era. So at that time, when that Muslim caliphate was fascinated about this culture, and one of his advisors, his name was Nashtakin Darazi, he was Persian, of Persian origins, he told him there is a small group of people who worship God in a way that you like, maybe you wanna hear about it. He was so fascinated about this existed religion and he wanted to expand it. He wanted to convert all Muslims to this new religion. And he succeeded and he actually converted most of the Egyptian people. When he died, some people say he was killed, some people say he disappeared, but his son came and he didn't like his father's way, and he wanted to reconvert them again to Islam. Now, the stories say, even in the Muslim history books, it says that this new caliphate, his name was Zahir, he killed all the new believers. But the original group of believers who were before all of this trend had started, they ran away, they flew Egypt. And this same advisor that helped the previous caliphates expand this religion, now he's helping his son killing all of these believers. So he followed them it's mentioned in the history books as the Mediterranean islands. They don't mention which island exactly. So he followed them and he met with them at one of the Mediterranean islands. And there was a battle where these believers killed him. And when I say these believers, because they weren't called Druze, they were called Miyachdim. Mm-hmm. Remember, Miyachdim means, and in Arabic it's muwahidun, it means monotheists, mm-hmm. people who believe in God Almighty, in Hashem. So they killed him. When they killed him and defeated his army, the Muslim people start calling them Druze as a curse name or a nickname. But the oral tradition says that from there, we escaped to Zagros Mountains in Europe, and from there again to Lebanese Mountains and Syrian Mountains. So that's the story. Yeah.
It's fascinating. What's fascinating more is that you told me that you're not really allowed to study, I think, the religion. Only certain people can study the religion, yet you show so much knowledge. So I don't want to say that you are the type of person to do a lot of research, but that's something initiated by you. But like you told me, you are not supposed to study or teach. Who are the people who are studying? Those that knows, I assume, those that will give you answers if anything needed. Who are those people?
Yes, definitely. First, I have to clarify that everything I'm telling you, I took from the history books. And there is also another face of this these facts, which is the science. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking anything from the religion because I'm not allowed, and I do respect this. Now, in order, according to Druze religion, let's call it Druze now because everyone knows us mm-hmm. as Druze. According to the Druze religion, in order to be religious, you have to commit. Now, I'm not religious. I don't have to practice any religious, anything that related to religion. Now, if you want to be religious, you have to 100% commit to religion. Even religious people, not all of them have the same level of religion. So we have what we call Barani, now when I'm speaking, we call Barani, which is the cover.
Okay.
Some religious people know only the cover. And the cover is whatever you see. And now they say that the Druze religion is exposed in universities and everything. This is what you see. Now, these people who get the cover, they were investigated somehow and they don't qualify to get the Jouani, which is the core, which is the true religion or the full religion. And now these practice the cover of the religion. Now, in order to get the core of the religion, you have to not only commit but be qualified to get it. Now, our religion, I can share. It's a lot of it is philosophy and spiritual learning. So, in order to get and science, by the way, and astronomy. Astronomy. Yeah. So, in order to get all of this science and knowledge, you have to be in a specific, intellectual level. Not everyone can. That's why we see that in the Druze community, at least in Israel, the religious people are only 10% of the whole community. And the people who really know, the people who really know the core of the religion are around like between 2 to 5% only. And they have to be over 40 to get to know most of the religion.
Uh-huh. A little bit similar to the Jewish tradition, how Kabbalah, can be studied, or the Zohar can only be studied after the age of 40. But you know what's fascinating? And I said it also after that evening where you, you know, told about the Druze and shared a lot of the information. And me and a friend that was sitting next to me, we said, that's amazing, because how do the Druze maintain their tradition and cultural practices in a, I would say, rapidly changing world? And not only that, it's like you can't even really teach it. You can't really expose them too much. Yet I'm seeing even you living in the United States, you are surrounded by Israelis and Americans, I have to say. You speak, by the way, the three languages. You speak Hebrew, you speak fluent Arabic, and obviously English. You raise two beautiful kids here, and you know how to maintain that tradition. And you do it in I mean, it's really, it's fascinating, and I'm admiring it, because even raising Jewish kids in the United States, not in Israel, it's difficult. It's a lot of effort, but at least for us, we can send them to, you know, Jewish schools, and they can learn more about their tradition, about the religion. How do the Druze do it? Because, and I'll dive into another subject that you can talk, you do not marry people outside the, can I call it tribe, or how would you call it?
Religion, ethnicity.
Okay, so you don't marry outside the religion, or and you also don't allow conversions. If somebody met a Christian, Jewish, whatever the wife, future wife will be, he cannot convert her. So how does it work? It's like fascinating.
Yes. So let me start with the fact that it's really challenging to keep our identity, especially outside of our community. Let's call it community. So it's really challenging, especially that we don't, our religion doesn't have any miracles. So we don't have any holidays.
Which is another amazing thing.
Yes. So when we don't have really holidays to celebrate, it's hard to maintain the tradition in the history, in the you know, the belonging. But as we know that humans can't live without belonging. So what we do, we have, you know, like Prophet Jethro, we call it prophet, but again, prophet in our religion has different meaning. But we have the Prophet Jethro's temple aliyah, like we do it every year. We have other people who we really respect and admire, and they have also temples that we commemorate every year. So this is how we maintain it in Israel, besides the fact that we talk, we live in communities, very close communities. Most of the Druze villages in Israel are close communities. It's very rare to see a Druze village with Muslims or Arabs or Jewish in it. So that maintains the traditions. Now, again, we don't have what we call hitbolelut. It's not encouraged in the Druze community to marry outside of the community. It's same whether it's a man or a woman. The moment that a man or a woman marries outside of the community, they are like there are no more Druze. Doesn't matter. So it's not like in the Jewish community where or religion where the woman decides what, you know, what ethnicity are her kids. So is that happening? Yes, it happens, but it's not very frequent because it's not very welcome, let's say. But it happens, you know, now life is changing. How I maintain it here, it's super challenging. It's only through talking and explaining and exposing them to what we do in Israel, to our history from what I can. Because again, the religion is secret. So it's very hard for me to tell them about things that I might know I'm not allowed to tell, or I might not know, because there are so many things that I don't know myself. But what, how I grew up, even in Israel, when I used to ask questions that someone wouldn't be allowed to answer me, like my grandpa, he was a very religious man, so he couldn't answer all of my questions. But he was telling me, you know what, Rania, this thing, it's better that you don't know now. Maybe when you grow up, if you decide to be religious, you will know, but trust me, don't do this or do this or don't believe this or this is not true. And because of the belief or because of this bond that we build in our community, I tend to believe him and to trust him and trust his decision. And this is how we grew up. This is how I'm trying to let my kids grow up.
And that's the true meaning of belief, by the way, that just believe, I'll guide you. When you start asking questions and start getting into philosophy and whatever it is, that's where you lose your path a little bit. So that's probably part of the why it's done. And I truly appreciate, you know, just even hearing it from you. And I love you before, but I love you even more since I've known all the tradition and everything. And we're women and we love women power. And Rania is also with me. We're in management of a nonprofit organization, and we're three women doing it, and I believe in women power. What is the role of the women in the Druze religion?
Okay, just I ask your audience not to be so jealous and not to envy me, because in our religion, women and men have similar equal rights in everything. Women can divorce a man. Inheritance is 50-50. Women can be religious leaders. So there is no difference. Actually, there are two differences, and they are both in favor of the woman, because women can be, like, should be either equally educated or more educated than a man. And it's a duty on the man, on her husband or dad, whoever is responsible for the family economically, to fund her education until she becomes into similar level or more. Now, these days, women can fund and can learn themselves. And now we see that even in the Druze community, the woman level of education is way higher than men, which is aligns very perfectly, actually, with our religion, even though it didn't mean, like, it's not because of this, but reality is like that. And by the way, in 2024, the Druze women were the most educated women in Israel. They surpassed every other sector, including the Jewish women. So education for women specifically is very important in our tradition. Another difference, that if you want to be a religious, we said there are so qualification, elements. For men, it's more tough. He will be investigated and questioned. Woman doesn't have to show any proofs. They trust her. They believe her more. So, yes, I think that in this part, our religion is so feminist.
Which, I love. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. but I see and follow different, religion. That's quite amazing. That's another thing. And I could see the power in you, and I can understand where it's coming from.
Thank you. But let's not deny the fact that we, as a Druze minority, because of the fact that we are a very small minority, less than a million in the whole wide world, and we live in an area in the Middle East, which is very tough for minorities, very tough for minorities. I think the toughest place in the whole wide world is the Middle East for minorities. And I'm not talking about Israel, of course. I'm talking about the Arab world. And let's be clear about that. So we were so much affected by the culture that is common there. But according to the religion, it's totally different story about women and their rights. I have to tell also that in Israel, it was the only place that we could clearly say who we are and also practice who we are without hiding behind other titles, let's say.
Right. And that brings me towards the next subject of what you actually do today. But your relationship, the Druze relationship with the Israelis, or what you said before, the Israelites, they feel very equal in Israel. And it's interesting because, like you said, the Middle East is surrounded. It's mostly Arab countries. And some people would, claim that Israel is an apartheid. And it's interesting to hear, the way you see it and to almost explain how do the Druze work so well as citizens in Israel, and you are equal in all rights, you are in the Israeli army and you have top positions, You are in the government, you are everywhere, basically. No one will see you as different. How do you explain that? Where is that coming from? And you're still a minority. I mean, you are, even if you are 1 million in the whole world, Israel is a very small country. It's only 9 million in population. So the Druze is probably, I don't know, a few hundred thousand.
1.6%, which is 154,000, including the Golan Heights, mm-hmm. which is another story that we can talk about.
Okay, so I do want to talk about, you know, being Druze. Now you're in the States, but you were born and raised in Israel. How do you explain that amazing relationship that we have with the Druze? And again, talking about people who are calling us apartheid, what do you have to say about it?
So, Yael, allow me please to clarify one thing, because I think it's more my duty to my community to expose this also to my to your audience. So, Israel, as I always say, that is not perfect, but it's not for me or for you. Israel is a young country. I always say that Israel is a young country. It was established only 76 years ago. It was established after the Holocaust. So we have really major issues that we need to work on. The Druze community is suffering right now from Kamenetz law, which is very tough law for us. But we know as Druze people, it's not aimed against us. I explain it like this. We are like a collateral damage for what is happening in Israel because of the whole situation that Israel is living in, since it was established. So let's just clarify this. But with that said, I say it with full heart that Israel is the best place to live in, not only for Druze people, for every minority. And I'm not saying that because it's a cliche or I like to, you know, to talk about it. I lived it. I was born there. My family was born there. I'm a sixth generation in Israel. And I, lived the reality with its beauty and its, difficulties. We lived the war. I was born into war like anyone who was born into war in Israel. We all, we don't know, unfortunately, our life without rockets falling or buses exploding or a war here or there or operation here or there. This is our life. And my life wasn't any difference because simply, I was like any other Israeli. Now, in Israel, we have to mention there is 20% Arabs. Among these Arabs, most of them are Muslims, 80%. These 20%, they don't serve in the army as a mandatory service. Some of them volunteer, of course, we have to mention that. But most of them don't. The only minority in Israel who serve in the army as a mandatory service is the Druze people. Mm-hmm. And that is not a new thing. It was since the 50s, the early 50s, like I think 2 or 3 years after Israel was established. And also let's mention that the Druze people took part also in the 1948 war. Mm-hmm. So this is the new connection between the Jewish people as Israeli people and the Druze people. We lost the best of our kids in Israeli wars, just like any other Jewish religion Jewish family. So our bond with the Jewish people in Israel, we call it blood covenant. And some people like to call it life covenant because it's not only in the army. We are also represented in every other sector in Israel. We are in the Knesset. Our representation in the Knesset is way more than our percentage in the community, by the way. Mm-hmm. We are in the Knesset, we are in the army, of course, we are in public sectors, administrative, everywhere, judges. My husband's cousin just got to be a judge just last week. So we are everywhere. And why is that? Is Israel treating us differently? No. Israel treats all of its citizens just the same. The reason is because we treat Israel differently. We accept what Israel want to give us. And when you accept what your country want to give you and you consider yourself fully citizen, that will happen. I wish that our people in Israel will do the same, because the law in Israel, everyone is equal. All of us have equal legal rights. It's just upon us to accept this or not to accept it. And the reality is that the Druze people accept this bond and they go through it, they go with it.
100%. And I do want to say that Israel does treat the rest of the Israeli Arabs the same as well. They have equal rights. The only one that we do not treat equally is if they are terrorists and they become against us and try to hurt us or destroy us, then what can you do? You have to defend yourself. So, and
you know what?
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say we have Sarah that is on live stream here. So hi, Sarah. And obviously she says, thank you, Rania.
I have to say something about Sarah.
I'll give you a second.
So when we reach that part, I have to say something about her. But hi, Sarah.
And there's,
you know, like, I have to say something that when I speak to people here, even to Jewish people, some of them don't even know that there are 20% of the Israeli people are not Jewish and they have fully legal rights. Mm-hmm. This is a fact. And some people, unfortunately, they think that all Arabs in Israel are Palestinians.
Right.
No. Most of them, 99% of them are Israelis. They have the Israeli citizenship. They have the Israeli legal rights. The only group in Israel that don't have Israeli, among the Arabs, that don't have Israeli citizenship are the people from East Jerusalem. And the reason why, because they refused it. Mm-hmm. In 67, they refused to get the Israeli citizenship.
Correct. Absolutely. And that obviously brings me, I mean, it's only natural for me to go now into what you do in those days. I believe you did it before October 7, but definitely since October 7, you are in advocacy for Israel, which you will tell a little bit, and but also get into why is it so important and authentic when someone like you, I mean, we're both Israelis, we are the same. But if I will talk and explain something about Israel or talk in defense, they will say, but you are Israeli, you're Jewish, obviously you will defend them. How does it look differently when you go, you're a public speaker, you go and I'll give you the microphone to tell exactly what you do now and how you work and where you go and where you speak. I'm sure there's audience that may want to, you know, find you and hear you, but let me hear you as an Israeli doing advocacy for Israel. I want to hear that from you.
Okay, sure. First, to answer your question, there are two layers to answer your question. First, you asked me why it's important to you. As a mom, let's start from this. As a mom who lives in the USA and was born in Israel and knows Arabic, so I have all the reasons why having the right facts matter. For me, like when I grew up, that when facts really did matter to us, we were checking facts. And it was so hard to check facts. You had to go to the library to check facts or to ask and to make investigation. Now it's very hard to very easy to check facts. You can just ask Google or ask ChatGPT, and they will give you all the facts. But for some reason, facts seem not to matter anymore. What matters now is a trend that goes, you know, and maybe the money that people pay you to change your opinions and to not speak the truth. For me, I wasn't born in that era. And I wasn't born in this era. I was born in an era that facts matter and truth matters to me very much. So when I grew up in Israel, listening to the Arabic media, because I speak Arabic basically, and then looking around me, looking at myself, and I see like how many lies were told in one sentence, it bothered me in a very early age. And then where I started doing things, I was very active socially and politically in a very early age. Back then, my late dad was active in the Likud party. He was a central member. And I remember myself always taking the Likud junior card with me everywhere, like my identity card, was so proud of it. And I was very active. I grew up in a very active home and community, as I say, The Druze community is a very good environment for raising really good citizens, let's say it. And I'm not talking about only about Israel. Everywhere you see Druze, they are very loyal to their country. They're very committed to serve their country. And same in Israel. So since I was born, this is how I grew up. And I also did so many things before I came to the USA. When I was a student for master's degree, I volunteered with Stand With Us for advocacy efforts. I toured the campuses in the USA, and I was faced with lots of anti-Semitism. It was so hard, but it was still easier than now. I have to admit it. I also managed, I was an executive director of a foundation that was established to commemorate a major general in the army. He was Druze, and I also was active in other projects in a very early age. For all of these efforts, I was chosen among other 16 young, promising leaders to be among the former President Shimon Peres' advisors, where we used to meet with him. So I was very active, and it always was very important for me to tell the truth. I'm a person who checks facts. I think this is my strength. I don't believe everything when someone says it to me. I'm very I suspect every fact. I have to check it first. Mm-hmm. So when you check facts and when you live it, you know the truth. You know that Israel is not an apartheid. You know that there are equal legal rights for Arabs and Jewish people. You know that Israel didn't start or initiate any war since 1948, if you go through all the wars and operations, not even one that Israel was establishing or initiating. You know that Israel was offering all the peace agreements back then, and they were refused by the enemy. Mm-hmm. You know that every time there is a peace agreement, you suddenly see that our enemies, which is Hamas and Jihad Islami and Kataib Azzeddin al-Qassam and Hezbollah and Iran and you name it, I mean to tell the list, even though no one will understand the words, to tell you that it's not only Hamas. So you know that everywhere there was a peace talking, Hamas or other terrorist groups initiated an operation or war against Israel. So how I can face my knowledge and my personality as a fact checker and truth seeker without really advocating for Israel, it cannot align with my beliefs. And more than that, I have kids now that are growing up in the USA. And if people here think that it's Israeli thing, they are mistaken and misled. Everything that is happening in Israel is happening right now here and will happen even in more more severe levels, let's say it. And for me as a mom, I want better future for my kids. Mm-hmm. I see what is happening now in colleges and everywhere and even in politics. And I see all the laws that they are initiating. And I see all the people that they are hiring as a top secret service, employees for the government. And I know what their background. I can tell you, I don't know if it's allowed for me to tell here some examples. But some people are very dangerous. And I'm not talking about Israel now. I'm talking about the USA. Mm-hmm. Some people on the US government that are number two to Biden, I think not officially, but basically, they are BDS movement supporters. Mm-hmm. They raise money for BDS, which is a movement to call to boycott Israel. So all of this is not only affecting my family in Israel, my parents, my friends in Israel, it also affects our future in reality here. And I have to tell you, after October 7th, if someone saw what happened on October 7th and still doesn't believe the Israeli version, he has a very, very serious moral and ethical issue that he needs to take care of it.
100%. And do you speak in front of... I assume Christians, Muslim, everyone, everywhere in the U.S., or where exactly can people find you?
So let me go back. When I came here, all of my advocacy efforts and everything, just I put it on hold because I was a mom of two kids and I have no family here, nothing, you know, to, no one to help me or support me. And you know the story, Yael, as my good friend. Now, on October 7th, a friend of mine, very good friend, her name is Sarah Cohen. She just called me. She said, can you come just talk about what is happening in Israel to a group of American women who don't know the reality in Israel as someone who is not Jewish? Can you just come and say what you really know? So I said, yes, of course. And I went to her home and I talked and she found like, oh, you know. And then I told her what I used to do before. And Sarah, I have to admit it, Sarah and her sister Elisa and her nephew Mayan, they were bringing Nova survivors here, giving them everything, all for, like, they were volunteering, doing everything that so that the American people can hear the stories, the atrocities that were committed on October 7th. And when she knew that I also have some background in advocacy for Israel, she kind of like just, that's it. She was like a soldier. She said, I'm going to help you. I'm going to, your voice has to reach every place that I know. And she started, you know, contacting people and she does this while being a mom of three and having her own business as well. So thank you so much to her. I really owe everything to her. And we started having speeches in synagogues, in churches, in also big organizations. I was a keynote speaker at Club Z a few months ago. I was in Valley Outreach Synagogue. I was in also a church, Shepherd O Valley or the Valley. So everywhere. We're trying to reach as many people as possible. We try to reach audience who are not Jewish or Israelis, which is very important. And anyone that hears, listens to us now and can help with these efforts, we do that because we really care. So they are more welcome to contact us and help in these efforts. I think everyone should listen to the Israeli story because no one in the mainstream media is giving the Israeli story a chance to be heard or listened to. And this, it's upon us. As I said, Yael, and I know you are the same. We don't wait for people to change our reality. If I want to change my reality, I have to do what I can to do it. And this is what I can do. This is what I know how to do it. So these are my efforts now.
100%. And I thought I'll have enough time to get into numerology a little bit because how can I not look at your numbers? But we only have like two more minutes. But I do want to say from, you know, a quick, you know, look at it. You're obviously a leader. You're obviously a peace seeker. You're obviously you're a person who's a justice seeker. You want to see that there is justice. And I don't want to say one thing, we were talking about reality, what is real and what is not. And there's a confusion in the world. There's no question that every picture can be looked in two different ways. And people are like having the time, the problem to figure out which one is true. So first of all, when you see, and that's my advice to you know, people who can hear, and I repeat it in every show, when you see that there is two ways or two footages to the same story, you better investigate it. And I say about October 7, and I had also a Zaka volunteer here, don't just look at what Israel is showing you. If you don't believe Israel, which I don't understand why, but even if you are not, then go search for different things. And one of the things I want to say even before October 7, the leader of the Hamas, Sinwar, was in an Israeli prison, had a very rare cancer. We did not let him die in prison. We are not like that. We brought him to an Israeli hospital. We performed a very difficult and rare tumor removal from his brain. And not only that he is alive and was released from jail, from Israeli jail, he is now coming against us, attacking our children, our women. But more than that, the terrorists themselves took pictures and videos and put them on Telegram live. Same time when they were doing what they were doing, they put it live. So go search for it. Don't look just for what Israel is putting out there. Israel is very bad actually in advocacy. We need more people like Rania you know, to do it, but go do some research, think, use your brain. Don't just look at what's out there. So that's why I admire people like you, and I always try to bring people like you. How can people get in touch with you, Rania? We have like less than a minute.
So we have an email called actforisraelevents@gmail.com. It's one shot, actforisraelevents@gmail.com. You can contact us if you have any events that you want us to come and speak. I'm not saying speak for Israel. Speak the truth. Speak the reality.
Search the truth. Search the truth.
And I always tell them, everything I say after the lecture, please, you know, come to me and I will give you the resources that you can check yourself. So, yes, they can contact us. They can contact me or Sarah through that email. And we will be more than happy and willing to help out, spread the word. As you said, the Israeli advocacy, I'm not saying that it's not good, but it's not enough. We don't have the $12 billion that our enemies are pouring into the colleges here in the USA for the last 12 years. Israel doesn't have this money. So we don't have the resources. We don't have enough resources. And it's upon us, the people, to spread the word.
100%. And I thank you for that. And again, this show is recorded. So one of the listeners was feeling like he's ignorant. He knows nothing. I'm ignorant too. And I learned that there's a reason why we don't know enough. So you can watch the show from the beginning. It's going to be shared on my personal Facebook page. And I'm sure Rania herself will share it. You can ask questions. Thank you for being here. Love ya. Rania, I love you. You see, love you, Rania, went together because I love you. You're an amazing person. And really, thank you. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much, Yael, for giving me a chance. It's your show, and I so much, really so honored to be with you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Show Me the Numbers with Yael Kagan, only on LA Talk Radio.